Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Happy Thursday. Thanks for turning on the radio this morning or opening up your phone and going to the My Faith Radio app and hitting the play button and getting the show this morning. We're glad you're with us. I want to start with a little message from Pastor Tim Keller. He says, Christianity does not provide the reason for each experience of pain, but it does provide deep resources for actually facing suffering with hope and courage rather than bitterness and despair. Boy, would I ever like to talk to him someday on the phone. Oh, wait, it's going to happen today, 7:15. I don't know if you ever saw the Chris Farley show where he interviewed Paul McCartney, and he was so overwhelmed to be talking to him that he just couldn't spit anything out. Well, at 7:15, be sure to tune in for my Chris Farley moment. It'll be happening then. We have a great show, though. We've got Dr. Paul Kengor is going to be with us. I had a chance to speak to him yesterday. We talked to him about the 100-year anniversary of the Bolshevik Revolution and the effect that communism had in the world. Up to 140 million people have perished as a result of it. And he's a really interesting guy. We're going to talk to him in just a minute. And then Kim Katola from Cradle My Heart Radio is going to be with us. And then at 7:15, Dr. Tim Keller is going to be with us. And then Peter Kapsner is going to be with us, too. So let's see. It's going to be Kengor, Katola, Keller, Kapsner. There we go. It's going to be an all K day. We'll take a short break and be back in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with us this morning. I'm going to entitle this segment, Listen and Learn, because I'm going to kind of quiet down. And my guest, Dr. Paul Kengor, is going to do most of the talking. He's a professor of political science and executive director of the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College. His latest book, which we've talked about, and I can't say enough good things about it, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century. Today, I want to talk with Paul about the anniversary, the birthday of the 100th anniversary of the launch of the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia. Good morning, Paul.
Hey, Bill. How are you?
I'm good. So this is the 100th anniversary, this October-November of 2017. What a bloodbath that has been.
Yeah, and I would mark the 100 years with the 100 number that we should think of anytime we think of communism, which is 100 million deaths.
It's unbelievable.
It's an ideology that killed, I think, at minimum 100 million. You could get into a kind of a guessing game, an estimating game with some of these numbers, but it's a pretty authoritative number. The Harvard University Press book, the Black Book of Communism, which came out around 2000, that used the number 100 million. The Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation uses that number, 100 million. And if anything, Bill, the number's conservative. I mean, the latest research shows that Stalin alone might have killed 60 to 70 million. And the 100 million figure only credits like 20 to 25 million deaths in the Soviet Union.
So that number's conservative, maybe.
Yeah, it really is. And probably Mao, who would be the greatest killer of all time, looks like he's probably responsible for about 70 million deaths. So yeah, a lot of numbers there, but in short, about 100 million dead at the very least, probably as high as 140 million. And that's like double the combined death tolls of World War I and World War II. You have to combine them and then double them to get anywhere near the number of people that communism killed. It's pretty amazing, really.
Paul, why are people struggling with the facts of history? You recently were giving a talk, and a student from the University of Wisconsin called into a talk show and said that they were insisting capitalism was just as lethal as communism.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. although I shouldn't say that I'm surprised. I mean, I've heard this so many times. But and you know, Bill, I even tried to help the kid out. Right? I said, look, okay, I know what you're doing here. You probably want to say, okay, Professor, communism's really bad, but capitalism has some problems too, right? I mean, you know, it could lead to, you know, some worker problem, exploitation, maybe damage of the environment. Yeah, I'm trying to kind of meet him halfway.
Mm-hmm.
They said, no. I think it's just as bad, just as deadly.
Wow.
And I said, you can't say that. You can't say that. And then a couple days after that, I was speaking at a university in Pennsylvania. It's Bucknell University.
Oh, yeah.
I'll stay on the air. Where it is, which is tuition there is $65,000 a year. Right?
Wow.
$65,000 a year. And they did a conference on the legacies of communism, and they invited me and two or three others. And get this, Bill, the professors that organized it, the poor guys, they got criticism from other professors on campus for not including pro-communism speakers, right?
Hmm.
For not including speakers who would speak well, I guess, of Bolshevism. And one of the professors told me that he emailed the other professor and said, well, if we were holding a conference on the legacies of Nazism, would you be offended if we didn't bring in any pro-Hitler speakers, right? But this is what you run into. And one of the students at that conference, in fact, I heard this twice. It just shows what they're being taught. One of the students complained about how we could stand up there and attack the Soviet gulag system when, in fact, 1% of our black male population is in prison in the United States. And compared to, he said, 0.8% of people put in the Soviet gulag. And I thought, first of all, I don't know where you get 0.8%. I'm sure it's way higher than that, but you know, people in prison in the United States, I mean, sure, some of them, you know, may have been, you know, put there unjustly and gotten a bad deal. But, you know, most of the people in our prisons are there for a crime, right? And, you know, in the Soviet Union, they hauled off people who believed in freedom of speech, press, religion, and sent them off to the gulag where they died in Siberia from a lack of food. It's like, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 million people. But I didn't get angry at the young man because I just felt bad for him. I thought, you know, no 19-year-old kid would ever naturally just come to this kind of conclusion or argument. You know, they're clearly learning this. And you know, that's a sad testimony to, you know, where education is today, and which circles back to why we're having this conversation. People don't know any of this because they haven't been taught any of it.
Yet being uninformed is no deterrent to having an opinion, is there?
No, none whatsoever. And in fact, I think that's another kind of sad state of education today, is a kind of an arrogant ignorance, right? That,
mm-hmm.
You know, people just kind of spout off. You know, we're in the era of social media, and, you know, you just get out there and kind of say whatever you want. And, you know, we've brought kids up to, you know, to think that, you know, all their opinions have value, right? You know, everybody has an opinion, and, you know, there's been this trend in public education for about 20 years, right, to make people feel good,
mm-hmm.
right? You don't bother telling anybody that they're wrong. And then you add to this kind of modern world of relativism where all truth is relative, and people think that they could just stand up there and make statements like that to people who study this for 40 or 50 years. In fact, that statement I mentioned from the kid at Bucknell, that came in response to a speech by Paul Hollander, who escaped communism under Hungary. He's in his late 80s, and he's been researching this stuff. He's been living this stuff for 70 or 80 years. So it just shows, what we're up against.
Yeah, wow. Well, Paul, I need to take a little break, but when I come back, I want to ask you, maybe specifically, you know, as a professor, you are going to have a better in touch with millennials and what they're thinking about communism and socialism. And I'm sure there's stories you have of students that have their come to Jesus moment where because of the education you provide them, they start to go, okay, maybe this communism was a bad thing. And we'll take a short break and we come back. Dr. Paul Kangor will be back in just a minute. Welcome back. I've got Dr. Paul Kangor on the line. He's from the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College, author of many books. And we're talking today about the 100th anniversary of the Russian Revolution. And so, Paul, millennials, they kind of tend to like socialism. What do they need to know?
Well, they need to know a lot that they're not learning. In fact, the very latest numbers, I think MarketWatch last week published a study, and I think this was by Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, where something like 44% of millennials believe that they prefer socialism, whereas about 42% prefer capitalism. And yeah, that's consistent, Bill, with what we've seen in study after study, year after year now. And it's amazing, they respond to these surveys with their iPhones, right, which mm-hmm. are complete products of capitalism. They don't even make the connection. But if there's one kind of silver lining in this, when you ask them a little deeper in the surveys, you know, well, you know, how do you define socialism? Or, you know, some of the ones on communism, how do you define communism? You like communism? How do you define it? And they define it incorrectly, right? They say it's about people helping their fellow man. It's about sharing with your fellow man. It's about helping the poor. And, you know, you don't get correct answers like, oh, well, like it says in the Communist Manifesto, abolition of all private property. Right? Like it says in the Communist Manifesto, I like communism because it, quote, abolishes all eternal truths. It abolishes all religion, unquote. Or like this passage, abolition of the family, exclamation mark. I love that, right? they tell us. They give us incorrect answers, and well, in a sense, that's bad. I see a silver lining in it, in that it tells us, well, if we could just teach them what it means, if we could have them read the text, read the original book. I hear again and again, oh, Communist Manifesto is a pretty good book if you just read it, and I'll say to them, oh yeah, have you read it? And they say, well, you know, I've kind of skipped around a little bit, and I kind of point my finger at them gently and say, you need to read it. It's mm-hmm. not long. You could probably read it in a night. Google online Paul Kangor, A Manifesto on the Manifesto, a little 800-word op-ed piece I wrote about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. Right? They list the 10-point plan right there. You know, take 5 minutes to read that 800-word piece, and then tell me if you still think it sounds like a pretty good idea. But there's a kind of, in addition to this arrogant ignorance, there's kind of an intellectual laziness, too, where they don't actually read the material. They don't actually read the text. So if we could just get them to do that, Bill, maybe we could help turn this around.
Well, there was a 2016 poll by the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation, and it generated a stunning finding. It said almost one-third of millennials believe more people were killed under George W. Bush than under Joseph Stalin.
Yes. And breathtaking.
It is breathtaking.
And that same study found, I think it was 28% of Americans generally believe that George W. Bush killed more people than Joseph Stalin. And you know, so it's not just those silly millennials, right? I mean, that mm-hmm. would be the numbers almost equal across the board. And you can only get that in a culture where, for the older people in the media, all they heard under 8 years of Bush was Bush bad, Bush bad, Bush bad. Mm-hmm. And the kids, 4 years in college, right? Bush evil, Bush evil, Bush evil. And the only bad Joe that they learned about in the Cold War was Joe McCarthy, right? Mm-hmm. They didn't learn about Joe Stalin at all. And so, you know, it's kind of easy for them to just, you know, hear that question and think, well, yeah, Bush, bad, mm-hmm. right? You know, Stalin, I don't know how many people Stalin killed. And another study, about 75% underestimate the total number of people killed by communist governments, and about 70% think that Hitler killed more than Stalin, when in fact Stalin killed way more than Hitler, and he certainly killed way more than George Bush.
Right.
What number do you even peg on Bush? I don't even know what that would be.
Yeah, I don't either, Paul.
I mean, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 American soldiers dying in Iraq, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It was sad, tragic, but it ain't 60 million.
Yeah.
So it's just madness.
Yeah.
Really crazy.
Okay, Paul, here's a problem that I think maybe many have, and maybe me, I have this problem at times. When numbers get so big, I don't know what to do with them. Like I heard the other day that Jeff Bezos overnight made $6 billion when his stock went up. So he made $6 billion in a day. I don't know. Do you know how to put your arms around that idea? I mean, so he gets to go out to dinner and order the appetizer now. I don't know what difference it makes.
When there's
140 million people have died under communism, the number is so big. I mean, 26 die at a church shooting in Texas. Okay, I can wrap my head around 26 getting murdered. But 140 million, how do these people die under communism?
Well, yeah, and you know, Stalin, and maybe one of the only profound things he ever said, the death of a single individual is a tragedy. The death of a million is a statistic.
Hmm, yeah.
And the numbers kind of run together. But like country by country, different ways. Here, I'll make this a little easier. Cuba. We think that about 15,000, maybe as high as 18,000 people in Cuba under Castro, the Castro brothers, were executed. This would be lined up against the wall, shot, bullet in the head, killed in prison, tortured in prison. And beyond that, we estimate about 100,000 people have attempted to swim from Cuba to Florida. It's a 100-mile swim, Bill.
Hmm.
And of those, we think about 40,000 of those drowned.
Wow.
So that kind of gives you a good number. In fact, I got to tell you this. In my Grove City College class last Friday, comparative politics, every semester we do a couple weeks on Cuba. We brought in a Cuban, a girl visiting from Cuba. And she was telling us, among the things that just had my students' jaws on the floor, she said that only recently have they been allowed to visit beaches, their own beaches in Cuba, and even then under the strictest surveillance. And my students all had this puzzled look, and I knew what was coming because I knew about this. And she explained to them that they're not allowed to visit their beaches in Cuba. Keep in mind, a country with beautiful beaches that's literally surrounded, an island literally surrounded by beaches.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowed to visit their beaches there because the government is afraid that people will jump in the water and start swimming. I mean, that's how crazy it is. Swim 100 miles.
Uh-huh.
And she also told us, and I knew this too, they don't eat fish in Cuba. They don't have fish because they don't have a fishing industry, because they don't have a boating industry, because they can't keep the fishermen with the boats in Cuba. They take off right away. So they eat pork, chicken, rice, and beans. That's what they eat. And if you look at satellite photos of Cuba, you see an incredible situation of an island without boats.
Wow.
Because the boaters and the fishermen and the swimmers on the beaches jump in the water. So Bill Bennett, Reagan's Secretary of Education, used to talk about the Gates test.
Mm-hmm.
When a nation opens its gates, in which direction do the people flow? And in the communist world, they always flow out. You know, in the United States, we have to. We're talking about building a border wall to keep people from fleeing in. So, I mean, that right there ought to tell you the difference between communism and capitalism.
Mm, wow. Paul, where do we, in addition to buying your books, where do we read your blogs and some of your writings? How do we get in touch with you on that?
Well, thanks. Yeah, the Center for Vision and Values at Grove City College. You could just Google that.
Okay.
Or the website is visionandvalues.org. And I have a piece up there right now called Birthday of a Bloodbath, which goes through these figures on the number of people communism has killed over the last 100 years.
It's amazing. I just so appreciate your passion and the way you help us understand this subject, which is it's an amazing story, and I appreciate your book, A Pope and a President, John Paul II, Ronald Reagan, and the Extraordinary Untold Story of the 20th Century by Paul Kangor. It's a book you want to read. Paul, thanks so much, and have a great day.
Oh, you too, Bill. Anytime. Yep. Thanks.
Oh, thanks so much. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Good morning. It's half past the hour. Bill Arnold here with you. We have a great, great show coming up this morning. More of greatness with Kim Cattola from Cradle My Heart Radio. And then we've got Dr. Tim Keller at 7:15. Let's just say I'm moderately excited. Okay, that was kind of a little bit of a lie. I'm really excited. All right, we'll take a break for news. Be back in a minute.
Looks so good that you'll be glad you decided to smile.
We're connecting faith and life together.
It's on my car radio all day. Colin Smith, David Jeremiah. I listen to Chip Ingram, Connecting Faith, and Charles Stanley, Susie Larson, everything I can get to. As I go between my different jobs, it just feeds me all day. I so appreciate Faith Radio.
It's more than information. It's transformation. Faith Radio.
Good morning. We hear a lot of stories about bullying, but what exactly is a bully? Paul Coughlin clarifies what a bully really is and how both adults and kids can be affected by them.
We would do better to have a different name. Bullying stems from disdain and contempt toward another person, and it's not about conflict or misunderstanding, two people who can't get along. It's someone with superior power that uses it intentionally to harm another person over time and for no good reason. It's victimization without provocation. This poor kid, or in this case now, this adult, doesn't deserve it. Most bullies look for nice people to go after because a bully is not looking for a fight. A bully is looking to overwhelm, and nice people are easy to overwhelm. Nice Christians, in particular, are easy to overwhelm.
Oh, really? You want a piece of me, huh? Huh? Can't overwhelm me. Anyway, if you want to hear that full interview, go to myfaithradio.com. Paul Coughlin, C-O-U-G-H-L-I-N, will be the speaker, author, and founder of The Protectors. We'll take a short break and then talk to Kim Cattola from Cradle My Heart Radio. We'll be back in a minute.
America was founded as a nation rooted in higher law, not in man's law. This is Jim Garlow. The opening words of the Declaration of Independence say, "We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness." The Founding Fathers understood that these unalienable rights are part of the higher law established by God. The United States was conceived with a thoroughly Christian foundation. More importantly, without the framework of principles rooted in Christianity, woven together, working together, we cannot survive as a free society. Each time we eliminate God from the basis of even one of these principles, we weaken and ultimately destroy it because the principle is rooted in a belief in God. Stay well-versed on these issues at jimgarlow.com.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us this morning. It's 23 minutes until the top of the hour. This is the time of the week that I get to talk to Kim Cattola from Cradle My Heart Radio, and she's with us this morning. Hi, Kim.
I want you in my corner next time somebody tries to push me around.
Oh, yeah. I'm there for you, Kim. No doubt.
Good morning.
So, yeah. Good. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you.
Good. Exciting day around here at Faith Radio. I've got Pastor Tim Keller coming up. Next hour, looking forward to that. But
I'll be listening on my Faith Radio app.
Sweet, sweet. Yes. But for now, I always get excited to talk to you. And there's so many interesting things going on in the pro-life world. Let's start with the donation to Mike Pence's name. How actresses now and people are donating in his name.
Well, this has been going on for a little while. So Mila Kunis is the latest to do this, and she announced the stunt on Conan. And she said, "It's my little peaceful protest." And then everybody cheered. So she announced that she made a donation to Planned Parenthood in the name of Mike Pence so that he gets a letter from Planned Parenthood whenever her donation comes through that thanks him for supporting Planned Parenthood. And so the Susan B. Anthony List answered this by tweeting out that they're accepting donations to the pro-life cause in Vice President Pence's name.
Mm-hmm.
And let's take a stand for life. And then he tweeted back, I'm honored. I'm in.
I'm all in.
So I haven't really heard any updates as to how the donation battle is going. But Mila might want to rethink it. She might want to walk it back because... You know, as always, Bill, the conservatives answered back in the pocketbook. This is what we're talking about, donations, right?
Yes.
They launched a boycott against Jim Beam. She's a spokesman for the whiskey internationally. And so conservatives are saying, you know, don't contribute to her prosperity since this is what she's doing with her money. I don't know, Bill. It really speaks to the rest of us, the bystanders, right?
Yes.
'Cause she can do what she wants.
I know.
She's got her platform. She's doing what she does. What does it make you want to do as we watch on the sidelines?
Because
there's a little bit of bullying going on there, isn't it? I mean, I love that theme for this conversation. She's trying to bully him.
No doubt.
The crowd cheers her on Conan, you know. I really wonder what he thought. You know, for you, Bill, as the host here, and, you know, the host who began as a guy to bring lightness to situations, really wonder what Conan felt
about
Mila's display.
Yeah. And I just thought it was all classy of Mike Pence to respond the way he did.
Very much so.
Yeah. And I was thinking, you know, with what's been going on Hollywood lately, if you had a 19-year-old daughter that was going to do a summer internship, would you rather her be working in Mike Pence's office or Harvey Weinstein's office?
Oh, my goodness.
For a summer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So anyway, let's move on to interesting development in the horrible situation in Texas where the gunman opened up on that little church and killed 26 people. There is an interesting twist to this story. Would you like to share that with our listeners?
Tell me where you're going.
The pregnant woman who was murdered, and they counted the baby as one of the murdered victims.
You know,
and her unborn child died as well. Oh, wait a minute. Then they backed it up a little bit and said, no, guys, we meant fetus.
You know, I mean, it shows you the confusion. And it shows you that when we as a culture decide that a woman is not only sovereign over life because she can decide to choose to end that life by law, we also then have invested that woman in whether or not that child's life has any value.
Mm-hmm.
And what's interesting here is that, Bill, I don't know the exact number of states that have feticide laws, but there are, I think, close to half of the states in the U.S. will, in fact, defend unborn life when that life is taken, either through negligent homicide or, you know, something that takes the life of the mother. In the other states, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And so it shows, yes, that and regularly this happens, that people on the pro-choice side, on the abortion rights advocacy side, will slip and say, it's a baby, you know, because of course it is.
Course
it's not
is.
Just a baby if we want it to be.
Yeah.
So you're right. It's tragic that a pregnant woman and child died in that shooting. And then to shift and dehumanize the child by saying, oh, wait, no, fetus wasn't a life.
Right.
It really shows the moral bankruptcy there.
Right. But you pull the curtain back and you expose this journalist because she said she was pregnant and, you know, died in the church. Not only her, but her unborn child. And then she had to dial it back a little bit. But under Texas law, Kim, an unborn child at every stage of gestation from fertilization until birth is considered a person for the purpose of murder and other violent crimes. Thinking abortion is a pretty violent crime.
Yeah. I mean, why do we change the definition once we come to a woman's will? The reporter on this one was MSNBC's Mariana Alienzo. Alencio, that is, and the woman whom we should honor by name was Carla Holcomb. a pregnant mother who was killed during that shooting that left 26 others dead.
Mm-hmm.
And do we count the unborn child? Alencio said, she was pregnant. She died in the church behind me, and not only her and her unborn child, but three of her children. And so during the press conference, they learned that the unborn child is included in the death count. So you're right, Bill. Under law, and this is what many in the pro-life cause, of course, are arguing for, that personhood would be reflected in our laws as it is in science, beginning at conception.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then people want to reduce that to absurdity. Oh, are you going to give a fetus voting rights? No, but we are saying they do deserve the right to life.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't that hard for us to try to flesh that out of what those rights would be before birth and after and at any stage of development. We don't give toddlers driver's licenses either, right? But that doesn't mean that they're not persons and that we can kill them.
And not that they don't want one, because, you know, you right. see those kids in those little carts at the store, and they're driving
yes.
their little, you know, they want their license. They want their freedom, but they're kind of stuck underneath a cart driving their little car. All right. I hate to repeat things that are dumb or idiotic, but when I come back, Kim, I want to talk about this womb transplants and this idea that men could have babies. It's just so ridiculous. I don't even like saying those words. So let me take a little break, and then we come back more with Kim Petola in just a minute. It's 13 minutes until the top of the hour. I'm talking to Kim Petola this morning from Cradle My Heart Radio. And Kim, right before we went to break, I guess science has been able to look into womb transplants. Now, you go ahead and take over from here.
This for a while. And what's interesting for me, Bill, is that the womb transplant just blows up my body, my choice,
mm-hmm.
which is the talking point that abortion rights advocates hang their hats on these
right.
days. They say, okay, even if it is a human being, her rights are more important because she's fully grown, or she's the one who would have to bear the pregnancy in her body. So my body, my choice trumps everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, womb transplants could allow men to have babies tomorrow, according to an expert, and this is being reported in The Sun from the UK.
Right.
And he says they'd be able to deliver the baby naturally. No.
No.
Oh, wait, they wouldn't.
No.
It would have to be by cesarean.
Right.
So Richard Paulson is president of the American Society for Reproductive Medicine. And he said 8 children, Bill, have already been born to women after womb transplants. He was speaking at a meeting in San Antonio recently, and he said there's plenty of room to put a uterus in there for men. Men and women have the same blood vessels. So he said the next step would be trials involving transgender women to help them become natural mothers. And they're already banning that in the UK. But academics there call for a debate on whether transgender women, i.e. men, should be considered for NHS womb transplants. And the artificial womb, Bill, is what makes this thing so interesting. Because if you have an artificial womb, you don't need a mom or a dad. All you need is a place.
Yeah.
And so... And what happens, what we find is, in these experiments that have been carried out, is that the fetus can grow in an artificial womb. What does that mean? That means bodily autonomy for the fetus. It means your choice involves the body of another human being. The fetus drives its own growth and development. And so there's no logical basis for saying my body, my choice. Every pregnancy involves two bodies. And the artificial womb debate, it seems like it can't get any more absurd. But what I love about it, Bill, is at the end of the day, God's truth shines that his design for life is the best plan of all. And we really need to step back and think about what we're doing when we try to tamper with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kim, Carl Lentz from Hillsong, he was on ABC's The View the other day, and he was asked whether or not abortion is considered a sin at his church. And his answer was a little muddled. He said that God is the judge.
Oh, my goodness.
I started making Three Stooges noises.
What I love about this, Bill, is that he's on a book tour for his new book, Own the Moment.
Mm-hmm.
And he got owned by Joy Behar. I'm just going to say right here.
I would not want that on my resume.
Because her, you know, if you watch that show or you watch clips on YouTube, you know that she's engaging in gotcha journalism there.
Oh, sure.
She doesn't really want to know if he thinks abortion is a sin.
Right.
She wants to argue that he's hating women and shaming women. So you got to tread carefully if you're in that position and you're a pastor, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he got owned. There's a way to say yes and stop talking and let her make her case, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many ways that he could have answered this if he sensed it was a trap that would not have disowned the truth. What he did disowned the truth.
Yes.
And it grieved me, Bill, because as a woman who had an abortion, especially in the aftermath, I can't explain this to you other than to tell you this was the condition of my heart. I had a little bit of religious knowledge from my childhood, but when I chose abortion in my early 20s, I was so far from God and the church and any moral authority outside of my own thinking, right? And
mm-hmm.
doing what I thought was going to help preserve relationships. And so afterwards, I knew in my heart it was wrong, and I felt a strong need to confess to someone who had some pastoral authority over me. It was like a physical longing for confession and absolution. And I know those are, you know, terms that are used in different denominations and different faiths, but I'm just telling you, it was in my soul and in my heart. And I think that it's something that we as women experience. We need to hear the moral truth about what we've done in our condition. And here he is, a pastor. He gets this question, and he doesn't help anyone. He doesn't help those who've already had an abortion. He doesn't help those who are facing that decision. He doesn't help anyone with his answer about, oh, relationship, and it depends, and grace, and it just was nonsense. And in fact, he recanted like 8 days later.
Oh.
He put up something on his Twitter feed because he was goaded by mm-hmm. Matt Walsh and others who said, what?
Yeah.
And so this is what he wrote on Twitter, Bill, on November 7th. He said, recently in an interview, I was asked directly if abortion was sin. I did not answer the question directly for a number of reasons, and that's caused some confusion about our stance as a church on this matter. I do believe abortion is sinful. Okay, there you go. He went on to say, our prayer is that we can continue to help and love those that deal with the pain of regret from personal choices, rather than cast further shame and guilt on those already carrying so much, and create a church that can teach people how to form convictions based on God's word that will be the driving force in all their decisions, which he could have said, Bill, by saying, I do believe abortion is sinful and we have redemption in Jesus Christ.
Yes.
And then he finished it by saying, I'll continue to point people to Jesus. Wait, when did you do that?
Yeah. Good point, Kim.
Above all else, every opportunity I get, the story of God's redemptive grace available to all is the best news available. Dude. I mean, okay,
yeah.
It's a little, too late.
Well, I'm sure the View will have him back on to let him retract his position and
clarify,
and yeah.
Offer the love of Jesus Christ, whose name he dared not say, as he quaked before Joy Behar.
Yeah.
I mean, this is my assessment of it. This is how I see it. This is how I read it. You know, and that he and Matt Walsh, by the way, followed up on their Twitter exchange by saying anyone who behaves like him needs to find a new profession.
Yeah.
He needs to not be a pastor because he was everything but pastoral.
Yeah. I had a conversation yesterday with Rebecca about this, and I brought in my blood pressure cuff and put it on her, and her blood pressure was only up 139 points. So,
well, and on my Twitter, on my Facebook, just on my profile, I was asking people, name at least one better way to answer when a non-Christian asks you, is abortion a sin in your church? And we got some wonderful answers. And my favorites, Bill, were people who just said the answer is yes. Because again, if a person has a problem with that or they want to dispute or refute or offer evidence that it isn't, that's on them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a straightforward question, and we cannot be we can't withhold that truth from people. that, you know, then we may have to have a conversation about what is sin? What is my church? What is, you know, why did Jesus come? He came to forgive the world of sin. Do you know what that means for you? This is, you know, make it personal. Ask why the person wants to know. Maybe they have a, you know, an abortion in their past, or maybe they counseled someone or participated somehow, but it's just such an opportunity. And it's an opportunity to share grace, to share God's mercy, to share the gospel, which is our hope.
Yeah. Kim, you know, there were a number of other things I wanted to talk to you about, so I'm going to put those in the file for the next time we chat. But, you know, as much as science does some weird things, it also does some amazing things, one of which is surgeons can operate on a patient within a patient. They can go into the womb and correct some birth defects while the little baby is in the womb. We'll talk about that next Thursday. But for now, that wraps up our time, and I will appreciate you listening the rest of the show. We'll get a little dose of Dr. Tim Keller coming up in the next hour. And, Kim, I'll talk to you next week.
Thank you, Bill. It's always great to talk to you.
Thanks. It's 3 minutes until the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and be right back. Thanks so much to Kim Cotola and Dr. Paul Kengor, my two outstanding guests this morning in Hour 1. Hour 2 is slightly more exciting for me than usual, because I have at 7:15 Dr. Tim Keller, truly one of my favorites, if not my very favorite. Okay, let's be honest, he's my favorite. There we go, I said it. All right, we're going to talk to him, and then Dr. Peter Kapsner is going to be with us as well to bat cleanup today. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.